Well, we've been talking a little bit about being called to freedom, more than a little bit. We've been talking about it all year. And we've learned a lot of things about learning to live like freed people. It's not always easy to learn to live like freed people because we spent so much time living in the world that's broken, that deals with the events that it faces based on the best that a broken world can offer, that sometimes we have a hard time giving that up. We had to get good at doing it. You know, Ted made the point that we were sinners. And Ralph this morning made the point that all of us were sinners. The whole world was full of sin. And because of that, because we had to live in this world, we had to learn how to get along in this world. And we even had to get pretty good at dealing with things using the broken world's tools. But God calls us to something that's far better than what we see around us. So we've been talking for the last week or so about becoming mature in God. In Hebrews, the fifth chapter, beginning at verse 12, the apostle says, "Though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need to someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food. Everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he's a child." But he says solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained to be by constant practice to distinguish between good and evil. Charles Spurgeon said it this way: discernment is learning the difference between right and wrong. It is knowing the difference between, most importantly, what's right and what's almost right. Now, we started thinking about some of the tension that exists as we try to follow God. And one area of tension is the tension between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. In 1 Corinthians, the third chapter, and at verse 6, the apostle says, 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 6, the apostle says, oh, I did it again. That's supposed to be 2 Corinthians 3 at verse 6. That's what happens when you cut and paste from last week's sermon and you're trying to do the review. In 2 Corinthians 3, we begin reading at about verse 1 or verse 4. He says, "Such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God, not that we're sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. The letter kills, but the Spirit gives life." How does that play out in our lives? When we think about the tension that the apostle acknowledges here in 2 Corinthians, what does it look like in practical terms? Well, we started by remembering what happened in The Merchant of Venice. We think about the letter of the law. Antonio had made an agreement with Shylock. couldn't meet the terms of the agreement, and Shylock wanted to enforce the agreement. And then along comes his defender, who says, wait a minute, you can't enforce the letter of the law because you need to enforce the spirit of the law. And if you try to enforce the letter of the law, and you are indeed entitled to a pound of flesh, be careful that you take no blood. Then it seems like what we're playing is gotcha. You can't enforce the letter of the law because it runs contrary to the spirit of the law. You really can't enforce the letter of the law. Now, we're going to talk a little bit this morning about two ways that that happens. Sometimes good is mistaken for something evil. And if that was the case, then enforcing the law would harm the good. So enforcing the law is just not possible because it's antithetical to the spirit of Christ. There is a parable that Jesus told. It's the parable of the wheat and the tares. And I'd like for you to read it with me. It's Matthew, the 13th chapter. And we'll begin reading at verse 24. And really, Jesus is recognizing what we've all dealt with at one time or another. Matthew 13, beginning at verse 24, this is what the record says. He told them, let me get to the right page here. He put another parable before them. He said, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. The servants of the master of the house came and said to him, Master, did you not sow good grain in your field? How then does it have weeds? He said to them, an enemy has done this. So the servants said to him, you want us to go and gather them? He said, no. Lest in gathering the weeds you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and at harvest time I'll tell the reapers, gather the weeds first, bind them in bundles to be burned, then gather the wheat into my barn. You see, the fact of the matter is that I can't always tell the difference between the good and what kind of looks good. I can't always tell the difference between wheat and tares. Now, I can tell the difference between bluegrass and crabgrass when it's growing in my lawn, and I can kill the crabgrass, but sometimes I can't tell the difference between wheat and tares. And so because I recognize that I can't tell the difference between the wheat and the tares, I'm afraid to enforce the law. I don't want to tear up what was good trying to enforce the law. Here's the fact. God can distinguish between what's really good and what just looks good. And because God can distinguish that, the fact that I can't always distinguish doesn't mean that God can't enforce the law. It doesn't even mean that I can't enforce the law. But that's the argument that people make. Enforcing the law will just cause harm to good people. Let's talk about another illustration. I'm going to try to do something that I've never done before. I'm going to try to show you a video.
Not only was that child with autism beaten, someone recorded it all, that video, now evidence in a criminal investigation. We do want to warn you, it's tough to watch. You can hear the teen boy with autism yell in pain as two classmates punch, kick him repeatedly to the ground, and steal his shoes. Then the video ends. That poor kid. That's all. Not only...
You've encountered that, haven't you? You've encountered situations where somebody does something evil and the law is not enforced, or we're afraid to enforce the law because we might catch somebody that was doing good. I used to work as a school psychologist, worked in a middle school. And one of the things that I learned when I was working in the middle school is that if a bully is picking on you and you fight back, you'll both get suspended. You can't hit back. Think about what was going on in Habakkuk's day. It was pretty much like what you saw in this video. Bullies beating up an autistic kid just because they wanted to steal his shoes. And they beat him mercilessly. I tried to show the video of a young man who was beaten in Australia. Two bullies picking on him. And he'd had enough. And he finally turned around, grabbed the guy that was picking on him, and body slammed him into the ground. Well, they arrested him for assault. Think about what was going on with Habakkuk. Let's turn back to what Habakkuk was encountering. You remember this. Habakkuk is kind of an odd kind of literature. It's not something that we're familiar with, but it was common among the Jews. They would write as if there was a conversation going on between two people, and they would record both sides of the conversation. So that's what happens here in Habakkuk. The two people that are having the conversation are Habakkuk the prophet, and he's having a conversation with God. So in Habakkuk, the first chapter, beginning at verse 2, Habakkuk says, O Lord, how long shall I cry out for help and you will not hear, or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. The law is paralyzed. Justice never goes forth. The wicked surround the righteous, and justice goes forth perverted. Habakkuk is really saying to God, the situation around me that I am observing is terrible. It didn't look like bullies beating up on a kid so they could steal his shoes. Maybe it looked different than that. But what Habakkuk saw was absolute evil. And Habakkuk said, the law is paralyzed. Now, listen to what Jesus or what God has to say in response. We'll continue the reading now at verse 12. Habakkuk goes on and he describes in some particulars. And then the conversation shifts. God says, Habakkuk, I'm going to do something in your day that you won't recognize, even though I tell you about it before I'm going to do it. I'm going to raise up the Babylonians. And I am going to execute judgment against the nation of Israel because of the wickedness that I see constantly exhibited. And then listen to what Habakkuk said. He's already made the point with God. Wait, the law is paralyzed. Justice is perverted. God says, I'll raise up the Babylonians. And then listen to what Habakkuk says. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you've ordained them as a judgment, and you, O rock, have established them for reproof. You are of purer eyes than to see evil. You cannot look at wrong. Why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the more righteous man than he? You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no ruler. He brings all of them up with a hook. He drags them out of his net. He gathers them in the dragnet, so he rejoices and is glad. God, you can't do this, because if you raise up the Babylonians, they're more wicked than we are. And if you do that, you're going to hurt good people. He continues down through verse 1 of chapter 2. And Habakkuk finally gets to the point that he says, I'll take my stand at my watchpost and situation and station myself on the tower, and I'll look to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. So I'll just have to wait and see what God is going to tell me. Here's the response from God in a nutshell. I know that there's far more to life than what you see under the sun. Now, it's true that when I look at the situation and I see a wicked man executing judgment against a good man, and I see good people suffer, I think there's something wrong with that. Good people should not die at the hands of wicked men. Habakkuk, the second chapter, at verse 4. Habakkuk says, God says to Habakkuk, here's the answer, Habakkuk. The enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. You're right. He's a wicked man. The Babylonians, they're worse than you are. But then this is what God says. This is the resolution. The righteous person will live by his faithfulness. It's a matter of living and dying. It's a matter of being destroyed by the one who is more wicked than we are. This is a statement that is repeated a number of times in the context of the New Testament. In Romans, the first chapter, at verse 17, the Apostle Paul says this: in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written. And I assume that he's quoting Habakkuk. He may not be. He doesn't attribute it to Habakkuk, but I assume that he's quoting Habakkuk. He says, the righteous will live by faith. 2 Corinthians, the fifth chapter, at verse 7. We walk by faith, not by sight. Galatians 3, at verse 11. Clearly, no one who realizes relies on the law will be justified before God, because the righteous will live by faith. Again, sounds like Habakkuk. I'm not sure that he's quoting Habakkuk, but it sounds like Habakkuk. Hebrews, the 10th chapter, at verse 38, the righteous one will live by faith. take no pleasure in the one who, and I take no pleasure, excuse me, in the one who shrinks back. The righteous man lives by faith. Based on those four passages in the New Testament, we most of the time restrict our thinking to say that the righteous directs his walk because of his faith in God. The righteous man lives by faith. That's what motivates him. That's what guides him. That's what constrains him. He walks by faith. You know, it may be that we've emasculated that statement from Habakkuk, the second chapter. When Habakkuk says the righteous live by faith, it doesn't sound to me that he's saying the righteous man comports himself according to faith. You know, we were reading this morning from 1 John, the second chapter. At verse 17, John says, the man who walks by faith abides forever. Doesn't that mean that he lives forever? In spite of what a wicked man might do, a righteous man lives forever. And you know, I think that comports most closely with what Habakkuk was talking about. You're right. The Babylonians, wicked people, are going to come down there to Jerusalem and they are going to hurt righteous people. But that's okay. Because life is not over when you die. That's not all that there is. There's a lot more than just what you see under the sun. In Psalms 49 at verse 18, David is reflecting on wicked people. He says, when he dies, he'll carry nothing away. His abundance will not follow him down. Though in his lifetime, he blesses his soul. While he's alive, it looks like he's doing pretty well. He even says this, men praise you when you prosper. He will join the generation of his fathers who will see the light of day. Who will never see the light of day. Righteous people live forever. Righteous people don't suffer the fate of someone who looks at life only under the sun. Yes, if you enforce the law, sometimes righteous people are going to be hurt. If you enforce the law, sometimes the bully and the victim both get suspended for 5 days. But that's not the end of the story. Problem is, learning to be a mature man in God as a freed person means that you have to take God's view of what life is all about. And that's not easy. It's never been easy for me, and I'm guessing it's not easy for you. I would rather not enforce the law if it meant that the victim also gets punished. That's not the response. We're called to freedom. We're called to be mature people in God. We're called to exercise our senses so that we can discern, As Charles Spurgeon put it, the difference between what's right and what's almost right. Hard lesson. It's a hard lesson for me to learn. but it's a lesson that I have to learn. If you're here this morning and you want to be in Christ, if you look at the world around you and you come to the conclusion that the tools that the world has to deal with the things that they face are all broken, just like the broken world that created them, and you want to be free in Christ to respond to the things that you see around you the way that God the way that God responds to them, we want to help you. Put on Jesus. You do that in baptism, and we can help you do that.